Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking about mind power and wellness power in a way that I think not only is it going to touch your heart and mind, but it is also going to make you aware how you must be mindfully present of the environment that you have yourself within. And it is so important. There are so many aspects in our life that our parents and grandparents didn't even have, or great-grandparents didn't even have to deal with. But in today's world, we do. Now, my first guest is Linda Wojcik. We are going to be talking about her book, Joshua's Lessons, Raising a Healthy Child in a Toxic World. And I think the story is going to intrigue you. It really did me, and it changed an entire family's life. I'd like to welcome to the airwaves Ms. Wojcik. Linda, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. I'm happy to be here.
Your son, Joshua, now you have a nice-sized family.
Mm-hmm.
When Joshua was born, you really ended up evolving into a world of awareness. That's what I would describe. That, well, my goodness, you wouldn't have planned for it in a million years. Tell us what happened with your son.
Joshua was my second child. So I had already had one child that was quite in the realm that we call normal behaviors. And when Joshua came, he was very different. He was very different, as all children are, but in a very unique way. First, I realized he was very allergic. I had already entered the health food realm when he arrived. My husband and I had decided to change our diet drastically, and I felt much, much better. So when Josh came and he was first introduced to milk, I saw huge physical problems associated with that. And so I switched that to goat's milk, and he did very, very well. But as time went on and as he got a little bit older, his behaviors started to get very, very tormenting to me. He would go from rages to throwing himself on the floor, banging his head, really erratic behaviors. And because I was aware of food so much, I started to pay closer and closer attention to where these behaviors were coming from. And as time went on, I started to keep a journal because I started to feel like this was very important information because I always traced it back to a chemical in his food, environment, or water.
Mm-hmm.
And so Joshua came as a teacher to me, and I was a willing student. I think that's why our relationship worked so well. I wanted to learn, and he wanted to teach. So as he got older, I started to... We reversed roles. I became the teacher. He became the student, and I started to teach him from a very early age what was causing some of not only his emotional behaviors and outbursts, but his physical symptoms. As time went on, the physical body started to respond, as it will if we don't listen to the emotional body.
Mm-hmm. With Joshua, now you, again, had already started getting into the health food field in the respect of understanding about paying attention to what's going in the body.
Mm-hmm.
It appears to me in our world today that people have so many more sensitivities.
Mm-hmm.
We have, in some instances, become just absolutely paranoid, in my view, about germs. And at the same time, people's immune systems just are not up to par to handling certain things. Now, mankind has always had to go through dealing with illnesses. I mean, there's been the plagues. There's been all kinds of things that have affected humanity throughout history. Disease is nothing new. This has always been there, and it usually is related to some kind of bacteria, virus, an organism of some kind that our body does not know how to handle. But in the modern world as we are living, we have introduced, my goodness, I forget how many hundreds of thousands of chemicals and combinations into our environments. And it seems like our systems are reacting to it, saying, this is not, we can't break it down, we can't utilize it. And so we have to be mindful of what goes on. And there are so many things in our environment that are directly contributing to certain aspects of illness. And the medical community has a hard time recognizing that. So it's people like you, myself, and others like that are listening to the show today that are taking upon themselves that positioning of responsibility to find out what it is that is affecting them. And I have a very good friend. She is so sensitive to everything. Every once in a while, if you feel like you want to take a feather duster and hit her over the head and say, excuse me, can't you just eat something? I mean, you reach that point and you go, I can't believe this. Mm-hmm. But what has happened is that her body has gone through so much trauma that she is so highly sensitive. And I know I've interviewed on my show a number of people like this. Now, with Joshua, you had a number of issues that you had to really pay attention to. He is so sensitive, and he is in that rare environment where he really had to learn how to be mindful of certain things. I mean, he couldn't drink the water at school because there was stuff that was in the water, like fluoride and Clorox, or chlorine, I should say, chlorine and things like this, and his body reacted to it in a very bad way.
And let me say that I taught him to be very mindful, yes, and he was so sensitive that his body would react almost instantly. And I taught him that that was a wonderful thing for him.
Mm-hmm.
He did not have to he didn't have to wait for reactions. And I think today, because people aren't as sensitive as him, we might have something at this hour and not react for 6 hours or the next day or next week even. So you're not connecting the dots to what it is because the body isn't as sensitive, where his dot was connected immediately, which forced him sort of to become very disciplined. And he had to learn how to say no. And water, you know, when he was younger, when I cleaned up the environment, as I went to more organic, he got healthier and more stable emotionally. As I cleaned out the cupboards of cleaners and anything that had a scent or a smell or a chemical in it and replaced it with natural stuff, he got healthier. So I watched my insistence on cleaning up our environment for him. And the one thing I'll always tell parents, because I work with parents with sensitive children today, your family has to support this. You can't have this stuff in the house and say, oh, I won't use it in front of him, or I won't eat it in front of him, or I can eat it and you can't, because they need such a support system at that age. They need to feel as part of the family and not weird or different. That's going to come a lot later in life, where they are going to be very weird and stand out, and they have to have a strong foundation to be able to handle that. And Joshua had that. And I find most parents today, when I work with them, they're not willing to put that much effort into it. And my concern is that if you don't, who will?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it is easier to give a pill, which I find that, you know, today there are so many children in our drug-free schools that are all on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And we've made it all okay. And there certainly is a place for that. There really is. Except there is a place to really look at how we are poisoning these children and the environments that they're in. And there have to be huge changes made. Number one, not allowing them to drink water that's full of fluoride and chlorine, because Joshua will react to that today if he actually drank it. Matter of fact, he was, and this is probably the last story in the book, when he was studying for his master's degree, and he called me one day, Mom, I can't think, I can't focus, I have a test, I can't. And I said, Josh, what are you drinking? That's always my first question. What are you drinking? What are you eating? And he said, oh, Mom, I got this awesome filter, and I have it on my water at home. And he was living in West Hartford, which I'm sure is one of the best water systems. And I said, well, stop. And he was so frustrated because he spent so much money. I said, Joshua, stop for 3 days, you'll know. And I called him 2 or 3 days later, and I could tell just by his voice he was fine. I said, how are you doing? He said, oh, it was the water. He said, I stopped drinking it. Mm-hmm. So he's still sensitive at that age, which was probably he was 26 at the time. What about these little sensitive children that are drinking water from the bubbler? And you have, in order to be healthy, you need pure spring water because water washes our system. We're washing machines and we're toilets. That's exactly what our body is. And if you use dirty water to wash, you know, the cells and to flush the system, you're not going to come out clean. So that's why it's so important to make sure it's pure spring water.
That's almost impossible for most people to get. So what would be the recommendation that you would make? Because I think overall wellness is very important. And I know just recently there was a water system that dealt with ions. Mm-hmm. And then they have a price tag on it of $4,000. And I go, oh, for heaven's sakes, the average individual can't afford to shell out $4,000 for something that you're going to use at home. What happens if you travel, if you're going places? We all know how important water is to us. So what would you recommend?
Well, first of all, if you have a healthy well, you're very blessed, and you should do everything you can to ensure that well stays healthy. Secondly, if you are on a city water system, I find around here where we are, most city water systems, some people can filter it with a filter and a decent filter. Brita actually does work quite well on most systems. Now, I won't say all of them. Obviously, it didn't work in West Hartford. I don't know what's in the water. And Poland Springs, I do kinesiology, so I can test different waters. And Poland Springs still tests out good, which I'm very, very happy as a pure source of water. Evian tests out very good. There are some very good waters. I don't recommend doing water that has been purified by the big major corporations, and I won't mention any names, but that does not test out well with kinesiology as far as the body is concerned. So, you know, you can still buy good water out there, but I do happen to have a good well, so I'm very blessed, and I can, you know, use the water right out of our tap. So, but water is the most, number one, I would invest in water for him, and he invests in water for himself today. You got to put, you know, I'm a firm believer that my money, when we were younger, we didn't have a lot of money, but the first investment I made was in food and water to make sure the kids were eating well and had pure water to flush their system. So it's all, you know, a choice thing. Would I spend $4,000 on a filter? No, probably not.
That most people wouldn't be able to do that.
Exactly.
Most people would not find that that's going to work inside their budget, even though it may be something that is going to create a benefit with the water, because water is, again, it is a staff of life in so many ways. Now, with your son, and I want to ask you a question. As a mother, did you have problems with cow's milk? I mean, did you discover that you had sensitivities yourself, or is this something that your children ended up developing independently of you?
Well, I only knew that after we took everyone off, which is why I say he was such a great teacher for all of us. We all had small, less severe symptoms, but had gotten used to them, so we didn't really notice them until we all got off of it and our bodies improved in different ways. So some of the symptoms of cow products, eating cow products, can be severe digestive problems, severe colon issues can be affected with cow's milk, mucous membrane problems, acne can actually come from eating, you know, too much cow dairy, and the body now has to send it out through the skin because it will clog the gallbladder. And interesting enough, actually, I just learned this most recently. Most people do much better on goat's milk. First of all, it's much closer to, it's almost exactly like mother's milk, except it's deficient in folic acid, so the body knows how to break it down. I also learned recently that cow's milk is acidic and goat's milk is alkaline, and I thought that was very interesting.
Well, goat's milk for centuries have been used by many, many peoples, and there is a culture of people, I think they're in the Caucasus, And by golly, they used mare's milk. That's mm-hmm. what they used to make their cheese. Mm-hmm. And I don't think many people in America would even, they'd go, excuse me? What did you say? Horse's milk? Oh, you've got to be kidding, lady. No, but that is true. That is a fact. Then they had their own cows, and they had their goats, and they had mare's milk. And they would use, actually, all of them in their own way in their environment. But you don't hear about these things. But the goat's milk, that is something, gee whiz, I can remember hearing conversations when I was a little girl about how a child had to be put on goat's milk because they couldn't handle the dairy milk.
Right.
Now let's talk a little bit about having a child in school.
Mm-hmm.
We all know what it is like, if we've had children, to send a child to school and to say, you can't have this, this is not good for you, this isn't what you want. And your son, because he was so highly sensitive, absolutely couldn't have any of the goodies.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Halloween that's coming up and the holidays. There's always treats and yum-yums that are sent to school, and everybody loves them. But Josh couldn't have any of this.
No, he really couldn't.
How did you work with the teachers? Because lots of times the teachers or the staff at a school would just say, oh, this is ridiculous. How did you manage to work with that?
Well, and I will say, especially back then, it was so less understood or accepted. He was definitely weird, and I was even weirder for even attempting. But I would meet with his teachers each year before school started and really explain to them how serious this was. And he would naturally always have an incident where someone, even he would convince a teacher that he could have it. I remember, I think it was in first grade, he went to school, and it was Thanksgiving, the day before Thanksgiving, and they had a feast, and the teacher had brought in corn muffins and juice. And he looked at those and was so excited. He was little. I can have that. And the teacher, you know, she remembered my words, don't feed him anything. And he kept telling her, my mom makes them all the time. And it took Thanksgiving Day, he sat on my lap for the whole day. He had a serious asthma attack. So I explained to him the difference between corn muffins I make with goat's milk and organic corn and organic stuff and the juices we drink. And he did understand. And he didn't want to be sick. He knew in his heart, in his soul, that that is what made him sick. He knew I wasn't kidding him. I wasn't denying him because I wanted to be mean. He wanted to be healthy. And when a child can't breathe, and I suppose anyone else would have gone to a hospital, but I didn't know what they would give him there. So he and I always sat it out until it passed, because we knew it would pass.
Mm-hmm.
And it was. And eventually the school got used to us, because we weren't moving around to different schools. He had a history that followed him. And the school, my thought was, he could not become what you needed him to be. You have to support who he is and help him be who he is. So, yeah, he packed lunches. Even when he went to friends' houses, he would pack his lunch in his bag. Joshua had an aura about him that people loved him in spite of all of his weirdness. And his friends were completely supportive. And it was fascinating to watch, because he was a leader and a teacher before his time. I always felt he came and opened this doorway to show people that it's okay to be mindful of who you are and what you need to do, because this, without help, is nothing.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It makes it very, very difficult. And being open and letting people know is very, very important. And if someone finds that they have particular food sensitivities, they just need to make people aware of it and maybe even take their own stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. Whatever works is something that is important. You brought up a term that some of my audience may know, some of them may not, kinesiology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you and your husband opened up a health food store.
Yes.
And your son Joshua was 6 months old? He was very young.
Yes.
So you really went into a business that created a very good supportive environment for yourselves, which is excellent. But you also really enjoyed doing the business because you were sharing a lot of your knowledge with other people. But let's talk about kinesiology, because that is a tool that I think can really help people. How do you use the kinesiology, and what is your technique for determining if something is of a positive disposition for ingestion?
Kinesiology is really a positive-negative reflex from brain to muscle. I describe it much like a lie detector test. And I've been doing this for 30 years, so, I've started these things before it was fashionable. Even the health food store at that time was not fashionable. It was hippies and drug addicts, so we were okay going non-mainstream, before it was mainstream. Mm-hmm. And physiology was introduced to me by a customer, and I denied him three times this technique, three times, because it sounded so weird to me. So eventually, the third time he came into my store, I went to take these courses, and it was offered by a herb company. And I learned them, and I learned them well, and actually, I became very proficient in it. And what I do is you can ask any question of the physical body, and all you need is a yes or no answer. You can't be asking, complex questions, but you can get yes and no responses. So I can help people or direct them into what body likes best to eat, if that water is good for the body or it's not good for the body. I can actually go through the system and see if functioning rates of the glands and organs, or if they're out of balance, or the chakra system. So there's a lot of information. And at this point, of course, 30 years I've been evolving into this. And now we really get into old memory cells. I take people into old memory cells that have become stuck in their body and are causing a lot of imbalances physically and emotionally, which is what I found with these chemically sensitive people. I find that the third chakra is very out of balance. It's the digestive system. They have a very sensitive digestive system, sensitive mm-hmm. liver, sensitive gallbladder, and that's why they are more sensitive to things than most people are, because that's where their energy tends to get stuck. They tend to live in fear mode, fear of rejection, fear of the wrong decision, fear of mistakes. So there's a lot of connection there. There's not just a one-way street to healing. Healing is very, I don't want to call it complex, but interconnected and very interesting once you really get into it and use the body as a tool or a language to teach us the directions we really need to go in to heal ourselves.
Give us an example of the technique that you use, and if somebody wanted to research this, where would they go?
I think you could put in kinesiology, and you would get muscle testing. Mm-hmm. For a practice, we'll call it muscle testing. And what I do, if I'm working one-on-one with a client and they come to see me personally, I will have them put their left arm out, and I will put pressure on that arm until I get a reading. And what I'm looking for is a strength and a weakness. And the strength is a positive reading, and a weakness is a negative reading. So it's like a lock. I'm looking for a lock, a muscular lock. And when the body locks, it means yes. And when it drops, it's weak. And like I say, I've been doing it for 30 years, so I'm very, very good at feeling these energies. And so from there, I will work through the whole body. First, I'm going to ask what they're working on. Is it physical, emotional, mental, spiritual? Is it a chakra system? And then I take it. It goes on and on. So there's a whole process to going through mm-hmm. a system. You can also do it yourself if you want to practice long enough. And you can put your thumb and your small finger together. I use my left hand because I'm right-handed. And you hold that to a certain strength. And if you take your right hand and your index finger and put it between those two fingers and try and break them apart, you will feel your positive and your negative. And you can get a positive-negative just by saying positive-negative. You'll get a strong response or a negative response. Once you get that comfortably down, that you feel it and there's a flow of energy going, then you can begin to ask different questions. So that's pretty much how it works. Very simple technique and very powerful.
Yes, it is. It's very powerful, and it's been used by, oh, I don't know how many people, for so many generations. It's a very useful tool. Now, I know we don't have a lot of time left to chat, but one of the sections in your book, Joshua's Lessons, Raising a Healthy Child in a Toxic World, that I find very, very interesting is how you have to really be like a detective.
Mm-hmm.
You need to understand that if you're checking things out for yourself, you may have a sensitivity that somebody else may not have. And that's not good. It's not bad. It's just your own uniqueness. And I think that is just one of the most important lessons that you, one of the many lessons of information that you share in the book about Joshua. And this, I think, is important for all of us. I find rarely do I talk to people who do not have some kind of an issue where they're saying, I just can't drink the water anymore, or I find if I eat certain foods, I get very, very bloated. It's as if people are starting to wake up to this. And yet, this is something even the medical field hasn't had too much of an interest in, understanding the relationship between medicines and food and lifestyle, but it's beginning to come forth. And I think your book, Joshua's Lessons, has a lot of information in it that can be very useful to any individual, and especially to moms and dads that maybe they have a sensitive child and they're just going crazy. They don't understand why things are affecting their child. Nutrition, environmental toxins, all of this has its impact. Now, Linda, you have a unique last name, Wojcik, W-O-J, C like Charles, I-K like King, but your website is healingyou.com, and people can go there and find out all kinds of information about you, what you do, and also about your book. And in our remaining time, we've got about 30, 35 seconds here. Do you have a statement you'd like to leave with my audience before we say goodbye?
Yeah, what you said was so important, and people are waking up because we can't deny it anymore. Our physical body will scream at us if it need be, and it uses physical symptoms. So pay attention, listen to it, honor it, and then change what needs to be changed, and love that you did it. Because I'm a firm believer love does heal all, and you've got to love your choices.
I agree with that. I think it's marvelous. I want to thank you for being my guest today. I wish you continued success. Keep on sharing your knowledge because a lot of people will benefit from it. And I'm so grateful we had this time with you today. This is Donna Sebo. I'm broadcasting live from Fairbanks, Alaska. My guest, Linda Wojcik. Check out her site, healingyou.com. We're taking a break. When we come back, we've got another guest that we're going to be chatting with. Won't you stay with us and join us? I think you'll find it interesting. This is Donna Sebo. Don't go away. We're coming back shortly.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hello, this is Donna, chatting with you from the far north. Yes, where the Aurora Borealis dances at night, and where you have to make sure. You have to be prepared, because who knows? It may snow. So far, it hasn't done that. The temps are balmy and wonderful, and people are enjoying it here as long as they can. I want to share with you a wonderful guest at this moment, Barbara Abercrombie. Now, Barbara is a professional writer, and she has been a guest on my show before. And what she has put together is a book called Kicking in the Wall. It's a year of writing exercises. Now, by golly, if any of you aspire to be a writer, you say, oh, I'd love to publish a book, or I just want to do this, that, or the other. I think Barbara can give you a kick in the right direction. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. It's good to be here.
Barbara, I want you to let my audience know, in a sort of short version, why and how you got the writing bug yourself, because it's very much a part of your professional life. You teach at UCLA.
Right, right. I just always wrote. I started writing when I was 6 years old. I wrote stories, and I thought that's what everybody did, and I just, I never stopped writing them. I stopped for a little while. When I was a teenager, I realized how hard it was to write. I wasn't too smart as a teenager, but was smart enough to realize that. And so I studied to be an actress, and I was an actress in New York for about 5 or 6 years. And then I got married, and I thought, I've got to go back to my stories. And I started writing again, and I've just never stopped.
In my mind, writing is something, whether you're keeping a journal, it's a section of privacy that you have within yourself, especially if you're journaling. And it gives you an opportunity to vent. And I think many times when people become writers, they are allowed to enjoy lives or experiences in a safe place. And maybe I'm exaggerating, but I think of, I've got a friend that writes horror stories. And I read them and I go, good Lord. What do you do? Where does this come from? And they have the best time. They're almost childlike in their attitude about it. And they say, it's nice. I write it all out, and then I just close it, and I go away, and it doesn't bother me in the least. And I think, boy, it's giving everybody else nightmares.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's special.
You get to live, especially when you're writing fiction. I've gone back to fiction. I've written a couple of books about writing and nonfiction books, and I've gone back to writing a novel, and it's like you get to live a parallel life. You're living your regular, ordinary old life, and then you're getting to be all these different characters, and you're in a different place. And I believe when you write fiction, it's much more fun if you're not writing your own story in the fiction. Of course, you have a lot about your own life in fiction. But basically, I write about other people, and it's fun. It's hard, but it's also, there's a great joy in it, too, and freedom.
Now, what made you decide to put together all of these different tips, like one for each day of the year, 365 tips, and anybody could open the book at random and just pick one of these exercises. Why did you decide to put so many in the book?
Well, I had written, the book before this was called A Year of Writing Dangerously, and that had 365 anecdotes or stories about writing or advice or stories about other writers. And I thought, and it also had a lot of quotes from writers, and I was just, I wanted to have exercises to go with that book. So this, I think of this book as kind of a companion book, Kicking in the Wall, to A Year of Writing Dangerously. And it was both these books have been one of the most happy experiences I've ever had writing, because I don't find writing particularly easy. But with this, I was looking up quotes from other writers, and out of the quotes in Kicking in the Wall come the exercises. And I've done these in class, and indeed, at the end of this book, I have 16 of my students and what they've written, their work in here. And I think that it's a way of getting everybody can can get into their writing through writing exercises. I do. That's what I focus my classes on too. I give, and 5-minute exercises, Donna. There's not a lot of time to do these, but when you give somebody a writing prompt and say, write about a time you didn't know who you were, you have 5 minutes, and they jump into writing, and they're not allowed to have any time to think. They just have 5 minutes, and if they don't want to write, they can write about, I don't want to write about this, but they have to keep writing for 5 minutes. And I have found just astonishing things that my students write out of these exercises. So I'm a great believer in writing exercises that are 5 minutes long.
I think that's a good discipline, too, because when mm-hmm. you do that, it allows the creativity to flow. And
yes,
sometimes
right.
it actually cracks a mental veneer so mm-hmm. that you get past fears. Because many times we want to compare ourselves with other people without respecting our own individual form of expression. And
exactly.
I just think that's what makes life so interesting, is the uniqueness of the way people speak and how they communicate and what is most important to them. You
right.
And bringing that into positioning, you have, and this is number 7 in your exercise, you have the questions, where do you live, in a house, in a town, in a dream, be literal or not. The photographer Dorothea Lange once gave her students an assignment to photograph where they lived, and they asked her to do the assignment too. And she brought in a picture of her foot. She had polio as a child. That was probably very profound for them. And that is outside
yes.
the box. That's
yeah.
outside the box.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's an amazing little story. I find it fascinating. Yeah. Yeah.
And then you have another exercise, and I'm just jumping around at random.
Mm-hmm.
This one is number 24. And above this exercise, you have a quote. The world begins at a kitchen table. No matter what, mm-hmm. we must eat to live. And then there's exercise 24, write about your mother's kitchen. Was the kitchen the heart of your home, or was it a mm-hmm. scene of conflict? Did your mother's kitchen shine, or were there dirty dishes in the sink? Did it smell like things baking or things burning? Or maybe there was no mother in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
There's all of mm-hmm. these various perspectives that
yes.
you're presenting, and it's a stimulus to the mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I had great fun putting this book together, and what I'm doing with it now is, and people who are writing fiction or people who just want ideas to get started writing in a journal can use it. And right now, I'm trying to get more into a novel that I'm writing that I had mentioned before, and I'm going through all these questions and answering them for my character,
mm-hmm.
which is very interesting because things are coming up, and if I time myself for 5 minutes and don't think and just start writing, sometimes I just write, and, I'm not sure what I think about this, but I'm writing, I'm finding the voice of the character by answering, by doing all these prompts, which I hadn't realized would be so interesting when I put the book together to do it for fiction like this. But I'm finding it helpful.
Yeah.
And I think when you're a writer, you end up writing the book you need to read. And this is the kind of book that I need, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a very good statement. When one watches a movie, and if it's especially a good movie, and I'll just toss this one out because I know everybody's watched it, and that is Star Wars. You have
mm-hmm.
all of these characters, and then you have the sub-characters, and then the sub-sub-characters, and
mm-hmm.
there's music, there's motion, and that's why the visual is so powerful. So when you're writing, you're creating a visual. People's imaginations
right.
step in and fill in the blank spaces, which I think is awesome. Whenever you're around children, you
mm-hmm.
can talk about a crow and that talking crow, and all of a sudden the children are mesmerized. Why? Because they have entered into their world with that crow,
mm-hmm.
the
yeah.
world of the mind.
Yeah.
And that's the power of the written word. That is the
yes.
power of the written word. It's always been that way.
Well, you know, I used to teach poetry. I was sort of like a visiting author in a school, and I would get the kids writing poetry. And the kindergartners and the first and second graders were the best because they could do that. They could jump in. They would write about their crow, and they had no self-consciousness about it. They believed in that crow, and they'd write whatever was in their imagination. By the time they got to third or fourth grade, they were starting to obsess on, you know, where should I put my name on the page? And, you know, what kind of write, you know, do you want pencil or what? You know, they'd get... They were growing up and they were getting self-conscious about their writing.
Mm-hmm.
But
no,
so what I tried to do in this book is get my students back to being little kids again and just throwing it out there. And there's no right or wrong way to do these exercises. It's got to be, you know, it's fun. It's an exploration. It's play. And sometimes out of play, we have to allow ourselves to play as artists, whether we're writers or actors or painters or whatever, to get to the truth of our work, I think, if that makes sense.
I think when we write, when we're able to write, and it can be journaling, and you just mm-hmm. write, you're just writing, mm-hmm. there's something that occurs like a shift. Where maybe
yes.
something is very important. And I know there are times when people are writing, they say, oh, my goodness, what if somebody finds this? And
mm-hmm.
I can remember thinking that many years ago
mm-hmm.
because I've journaled for years. Oh, my goodness, do
yeah.
I want anybody really to read this? And I think of the furor that came about when Mother Teresa's diary was found. My goodness,
mm-hmm.
the delightful yeah. human being that had an impact on millions of people's lives, she was a human. And that was something that was just so much publicized. And I thought, this is a woman that went through so many dark nights of the soul. There are so many things that she experienced. What a wonderful gift that was to have left
mm-hmm.
so
yeah,
that people could see.
That's a very good example. Yeah.
And I think this is so important.
Mm-hmm. And I think I think you can write your way. I think I think writing in a journal is very therapeutic. I used to teach for years I taught a workshop in a cancer community, the wellness community,
mm-hmm.
and people they did not want to be writers. They hadn't, most of them hadn't written very much, but we did these 5-minute exercises and wrote about, you know, all the serious things that you go through and think about when you have cancer. and I wrote a book about that called Writing Out the Storm. And it was amazing how, you know, how helpful writing really was to people. It was a way to kind of emotionally heal from a very difficult
mm-hmm.
experience. Yeah.
Barbara, your book, Kicking in the Wall, I think is a wonderful tool. No matter what kind of a writer or person might be, I think you have put on together 365 tips that can mm-hmm. be quite an interesting stimulus dependent on what a person comes up with. And I personally like just the idea of opening the book, flipping a page and saying,
mm-hmm.
taking my finger and say, okay, I'm going to do this one. And not
yeah,
trying to be
yeah.
too intellectual about it, just go for it. I think it's a
exactly.
great tool to use, and I'll tell you, if anybody's a teacher, you have any kids, this would be a good way to get an insight as to what's going on with them, having this
yeah.
kind of an exercise. Whoa, wouldn't that bring up conversation around the family table? Barbara,
I have a friend who said he's using it for dinner conversation with his teenagers.
Oh, boy, won't that be an eye-opener?
Yeah,
Barbara,
exactly.
Your website is
yeah.
barbaraabercrombie.com. Your last name is
right.
spelled A-B-E-R-C-R-O-M-B-I-E, BarbaraAbercrombie.com.
Mm-hmm.
So with all your background experience, your teaching at UCLA, the wonderful, wonderful gift of writing, how important it is in the life, and I know that you'll continue to write, and when you do come out with your next novel, be sure and let me know.
Okay, I will. Thank you so much, Donna.
You are welcome. This is Donna Siebel. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hello, and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo broadcasting from beautiful Fairbanks, Alaska. And by the way, if you want to call in and chat with me, even though we don't have a whole bunch of time left, 888-627-6008. Quickly, I know we've got a caller on the line. I want to let you know who's coming on the air tomorrow. It is Donna Stone, and this is a woman who, within 2 weeks, was able to shift her life and her wellness. And if you're like me, you're always battling the bulge in some way. I have one of these very efficient bodies. It's like I can inhale a chocolate cake fragrance, and it's like, okay, 2 inches on the left hip. Anyway, this is something that has been a part of my life. But Donna has some wonderful, wonderful attitudes and points of information. So she's going to be with us next week. We've got a great lineup of guests. We are going, and you can go to the website, the station's website, and you can find out the details about the people that are going to be coming on with me. But let's get to our very patient caller who has been waiting on the line. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, Donna. M, and I'm calling from Puyallup, Graham area.
Well, Puyallup, Washington. All right. Okay, Em, what I'm looking at relative to you is you've got to rethink your strategy. You are in a place where you feel like you're tied down by other people and circumstances. I'm getting an image of you standing, and there are like cords that are wrapped around your arms, and they're extending down into the ground. They're anchored. And you just don't have very much movability. You just feel like you're stuck. And the reality is you've got to think through what it is that you really, really need to do so that those ropes or those circumstances can disintegrate so that you can move forward as you want. Now, let's use an example. Let's say that maybe you had a financial situation and you had a lot of debt. And you go, how in the world can I get out from under this? Well, maybe it means you have to work with a budget. Maybe it means you have to make a decision about selling something or not selling something. Maybe letting something go. Maybe not doing that. Maybe acquiring something else. It's thinking through what needs to be done so that you can, again, disintegrate what the challenges are. And there's multiple challenges here because I'm not seeing just one rope. I'm seeing like five or six. So when I look at this, I want you to know it's going to take you 6 to 8 months to really work through what needs to be done, but there needs to be a strategy. Let me give you an example. I know of a young couple
The husband had gone through bankruptcy. The wife didn't have any problems with credit. They were newly married, and they wanted to buy a car. They were told by a bank that they went to that they couldn't buy the car because of the bankruptcy that was on the record. However, if they made a point of setting up a budget and paying off the credit that was outstanding, then they were to come back within a year. So in that year's period, the couple lived very, very frugally, so much so that they were lucky if they had a dollar a month to spend on anything extra. They did that, and within 1 year, they had paid off all of the creditors. They went back to the bank, to the manager of the bank, that said, if you do this, then we'll consider the loan. They did it. The bank manager just about fainted, said, we have never, ever had anybody do this. But this young couple did this. When they did it, they were able to get the car that they wanted. Now, I know that's a really simplistic story, but it's important for you to understand that whatever it is that needs to be shifted and changed, there has to be a strategy. And I'm using money as an example because I think that's a very good image to use. But if you do that, you will be within 6 to 8 months unencumbered by what you feel is shackling you in place. Do you have a question for me?
Actually, that was pretty helpful. I do have a question, and I had some legal help, and the attorneys yesterday decided to withdraw, and I was wondering if it would be beneficial for me to get another attorney and continue on with this legal action I was taking.
All right. This is a complex situation. You need to look at it. And again, this is where strategy comes in. Number one, you need to get feedback from the attorneys that are withdrawing. You need to go to them, and you need to ask them directly. What are the weaknesses? Why is it you're withdrawing? Is there something I need to know about that you're not telling me? It may be they do not feel that they're qualified to take it on. It may be
right. They
just don't want to take the risk. And that is what you need to find out, because if you have something specifically that has to be addressed, very specifically, you need someone that has the skills and the understanding about this. Also, you need to look in the long term. Are you going to end up having to sacrifice more than what you want to? Is this something you want to go long-term with? There's so many questions here, and there's no way I can cover all of this on the air. But it's something that you need to think through. And if you have someone else that's got the analytical capacities that can throw questions at you, this will enable you then to have clarity with whatever decision you need to make.
Okay.
And, my dear, I'm sorry. I've got to go because I'm out of time.
Okay. Thank you, Donna. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. And for those of you listening, and also for you, Em, I'm always available by phone. And I'll be back in my office next week. Meanwhile, I'm traveling up here in the far north, and this is Donna Siebel. I'm so delighted you've shared your time with me today. Tomorrow, well, we're going to find out some more good things about how we can take care of ourselves and enjoy a richer, healthier life. After all, the saying is, if you don't have your health, what do you have? I'll tell you what, a sick body, and you don't get anything done with that. So let's work towards empowering ourselves in a wonderful way. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Siebel. I'll talk with you tomorrow from Anchorage, Alaska. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.